Where were we? I lost my train of thought. I just want to say something about that thing about photography. The problem about public photography these days is nobody trusts each other. Right? So the only reason that Liz is anxious to make sure that there's some provision for some difference in that choice, or some choice on that point, is because we seem to be currently very anxious about the uses of photography. And I think I have to say there's no solution to that unless you rethink what trust is, and you rethink your own attitude to how bad you think other people are. Right, sorry, just wanted to say that the point about worrying about photography is that we don't trust the uses that it will be put to. And I think the only reason I brought that up is because one of the aspects I think are important in this discussion is the nature of trust between adults with regards to what it means to be able to look after kids. I don't know if that, you know, points us anywhere.
I just want to really pick up on...
Who are you, by the way?
Sorry. My name is John Marin. I'm trying to pick up on the previous lady who said that it's really all to do with the individual choice, not just what you do with your child, how you incorporate them within your practice and such like. But I think with regard to the mix of children and art and exhibitions and installations and such like, I think the main thing is you yourself have your own personal choice as to whether you want to involve your child in that. Now, that may well be influenced, as we've already talked about, by any number of other factors, child welfare, child parenting, economic factors and such like. But I think it is right that the institution, the people working out the installation, the exhibition, should at least give you the opportunity to exercise your choice. So just like you had created an area where if people had decided to bring children, they could occupy themselves there, that is the choice that they should give you. And I think that's the important thing about places like this and such like, that they at least give you the opportunity to exercise your own personal choice.
Just, I think also sometimes it's about you forcing them to give you the choice, because they might not think, my experience of working with that institution is that although it's mainly women that kind of like work at that commissioning project management level, very few of them have children, so they actually don't really have the experience. So you need to kind of like make that explicit. And one thing, for example, when I'm invited to give a talk that tend to be in the evenings or things in the weekend, I ask for a top-up to my fee for childcare. I say, okay, are you going to pay me childcare too? Sometimes they don't have any more money and they say no, but sometimes they go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, of course, sure. Here, £35 more. But you need to kind of like be quite assertive about that and put it on the table all the time too, because it is a sector that there is not a lot of people with children, and they just don't realize what the reality is.
I just want to slightly push this question of trust and informality. Do you instead, on any other occasions, ask, I'll do the talk, but have you got an intern that could look after my child whilst I'm there?
Sometimes I get the curator to look after the child.
Okay. All right.
No, but in terms of like the trust thing, I'm from South America, and it's just so different, the whole relationship that people have to children there. I think there is something that is very specific to the culture of this country. And the relationship with children that is very difficult. There, I think, it's kind of like quite normal. Even if you get on the bus with a child and there is someone sitting, they will get your child off your arms and put them on the lap, and no one would think it's a pedophile trying to rape your child. It's kind of, I think there is a very heightened sense here that any adult is potential harm to a child. And where that comes from, I don't know, but I find that it's much more relaxed, and it's much more easy to have children in other cultures. They don't seem to be such a problem.
Does that sound wildly fantasist? Does that seem like the reality of parenthood in this particular country?
Hi, sorry. Can I just bring it back to the photography issue as well? I'll say something about my own experience of motherhood and bringing up a child as well, but before we go on to it, I certainly didn't know this event was going to be documented, so I think in terms of letting people know what the media attention was going to be, that would have been helpful to know. But I don't think, I mean, my child is here, she's somewhere around, I don't have any problems about her being photographed, you know, it's not a trust thing in that sense, it's more kind of what is it being used for, and that was explicit. So anyway, but bringing it back to the topic that we're discussing about kind of how motherhood has affected me personally, at the moment my mother looks, I'm originally from Japan, where obviously things are slightly different. The setup there is totally different to how childcare is provided over here as well. So I'm very dependent and quite lucky to have my mother to look after my child while I work 3 days a week. But I've never asked her to look after my child so that I could have some free time to do my own artwork. So I don't know whether that's just an internal struggle within me, whether I can say to myself I can justify asking her time to be used on something that I could do which isn't money making or is more for my kind of personal and kind of spiritual or moral kind of good. And I'm going off the point slightly now, but in terms of kind of social attitudes to how adults are viewed in relationship to children, I think similarly in Japan as well, there are a lot more adults who will kind of look after children in on a wider kind of circle. So it would be kind of relations or kind of next door neighbours. And again, it's a similar thing, you know, you wouldn't kind of bat an eyelid if somebody kind of came and picked up your baby and started cuddling them, you know. So maybe it is a cultural thing, but yeah.
I suppose that it's important to kind of point out that also artists, by the character of what they do day to day, can't even access even private provision that might be, for example, in the workplace. You know, office creches have had some success. They do occur. They're often things that are very subject to how wealthy a business feels about itself. But even there, because you're not part of even that kind of collective organization, or, you know, a commercial workplace, you're uniquely deprived of that possible sort of infrastructure too. So does that mean that this seems to be coming back again and again to childcare and the type of childcare which is required and whether we can actually make the choice to use it or not, or whether it is simply not available on the terms that artists would need it. And I think that certainly comes back down to income issues, because I am shocked nowadays to hear people talk about mothers wanting to go back to work, going back to work to often professional jobs, and then finding out that actually they're paying the best part of their salary for weekly childcare, full-time childcare. You know, and we're talking, you know, substantial salaries, above average. So it seems to me quite shocking that that's what women are prepared to give up, basically give up salary for childcare in order to pursue their careers again. And I just want to kind of maybe talk in more detail about what we actually expect to be available for the kinds of resources that we have.
I was just going to ask, is it only artists, you think, or is it all people who are self-employed? Because you said that, you know, yeah, my friend's a doctor, there's a creche at her hospital, but there isn't that option if you work for yourself and you work from somewhere that isn't an institution. Just a question.
Mine's slightly on a tangent, but in terms of when you look at kind of artist opportunities, there's so many kind of requests for free work. So it depends where you are on the scale, what does emerging artist mean? It still means you're not getting paid or for a lot of things. So in talking about kind of having the niceties of having a creche within a museum, or kind of, that's quite far up the scale of artist work. So you're trying to get into kind of the smaller galleries in London, there isn't that kind of facility. Most of the adverts that are on Axis, Artist Newsletter, you're paying to submit work to get reviewed. People are angling for you to actually pay an exhibition fee. So in terms of money coming back, a lot of the time, I know Abigail earlier was talking about cutting out the faffing, is now talking about actually not applying for stuff, because it's not what's not in it for me. It's kind of like thinking, well, can I actually afford to actually submit work? Because if it gets accepted, can I afford to pay for it to be made for a short gallery where I'm then having to pay on top? So I think I don't think artists and the relationship between institutions and smaller institutions aren't absolutely supportive to artists. And I think it's a kind of a double whammy for those with children, because it becomes financially almost impossible to make work in terms of getting that work seen. Yeah.
Linda, you had a point?
I would say, JJ, if you are thinking about it, I would say go for it, because you do just manage, and it is difficult, but it is definitely worth it. I do remember ages ago Nagla saying that about having children, you know, how difficult it would be, and she's four now, so it must be good. I was going to talk about what Lee was saying about applying for things, because I think for me, my little girl was very ill for well over the first year, so I had to do everything on my own. I didn't make any work, and I find it really difficult to get back into that loop now, because I think once you stop and then try again, and especially if you try to do something different, every time you apply for something, when they ask what you've done for the last, you know, while, and you have nothing to say for that, oh yes, I had a child, it just seems so negative on applications, that you feel like you've got to be this sort of superstar with this massive repertoire of, you know, and it just seems so negative. I don't know if other people
is there an have that problem. And it's one of the points that came up in some of the questions we were putting together, is in a very kind of atmospheric sense, in a very general sense, it's almost hard to kind of detect. Does the way in which the art world function assume a kind of straight career path, a kind of commitment, which is based on the model of someone who simply has no other commitments?
To begin with, yeah. I mean, if you got pregnant as a teenager, it'd be very, very hard to break into, like, the art world. I had a lot of my career before I had Sunny, so I was really, really lucky in the fact that I have contacts I can now go to, and I've started to go back to work, and I've started to work with people again, and I had that, oh, you can do what Martina's done, and she set up this. It's like, the thing is that I think you've got to become an entrepreneur when you have a child, and you've got to find your rhythm and how to do it. For example, I went and did a sixth form college, and I did a part-time course for a morning a week, and I did that not only because I wanted to learn these skills, but it was my way of finding out how I can get back to work, how I have to get up in the morning, how I have to get him ready, because when you've been out of the loop, you need to find you've got to be somewhere on time. It's really healthy to find something like that, so I definitely suggest do a part-time course, apply for awards, and you've just got to push so hard. I used to go to college really knackered. He's up all night. He's not slept one night since he's been born. You have to push through it really hard and just do it. And that's my only suggestion I've got.
And I say, in terms of what you were asking, you can put in your CV. I put in my CV, I had 2 years, as a maternity respite. You are allowed to have children and to take time off work for that. And, you know, if someone looks at your CV and doesn't like that, what kind of person it is, you want to work with them anyway. So I think, you know, and then the children grow, and then, you know, they're kind of like this 2002 in your CV is very far, and you have years with loads of activity. And I discussed this with professionals, with people that direct institutions, and they didn't seem to have a problem with you actually saying, these 2 years I did nothing because I was bringing up a small child. And sometimes I think we kind of preempt a lot what other people might think of this. The thing of childcare, I think, is very, very, very important. And I think it's not so much an issue of being self-employed or employed, but about your income, how much you earn. Because the friends of mine, the people that I live with, the jobs that they do are much more demanding. So I got friends that work in Sainsbury's, in the till. They have to do shifts. They have very long hours of work. They earn very little money. Nurses, teaching assistants, the hours that these people work, the shifts that they have to do, and the money they bring back home, plus they have to pay for childcare, because at times it's not like us that we can think, oh, I work at night and then I sleep a little bit on the day. No, they have to be there and clocking. And that's, and I guess what I have seen, for example, over the last 3 months, is very quick with the kind of, like, the Tories coming to power, and the kind of, like, attack on the poor that, you know, Labour started and the Tories are kind of like launching, you know, the thing of like the impact that that's going to have on families. What has happened a lot in the inner city too, where people are quite, you know, on low income, and that's my experience of this year, is that gentrification has a big impact too. So I live in Brixton all my life, and childcare was subsidized because it was considered an area of deprivation. Now it has become gentrified. The social indicators have gone up, and the money, the subsidies are being pulled out. Now, the middle-class families, they don't need to pay for childcare because they have one parent at home or a grandparent, someone looking. So the people that are losing the childcare are the ones that have to go and do those jobs. That's quite a major issue.
Can I lead that into something, more detailed question to those people who have experience of it here? Is public or municipal or government-sponsored or provided childcare been of any use? And in which format? Because, of course, the last government made a great effort, it seems, to provide forms of subsidy for parents to be able to take central money to various childcare providers. And I want to know whether that has worked.
The government have cut all childcare for under a two-year-old without it being hugely expensive. Every child facility I went said, your child's under two, therefore it's like this much money, and I couldn't get any public assisted childcare.
And I guess the second question to that is, even if you don't find subsidy available, is actually childcare affordable in the forms that you want it? It's not so much how much you earn, you know, I think the question is not so much about whether we're talking about people who are richer or poorer, but whether childcare itself is costly or more cost effective. No, that's to say, is it cheap? Was it cheap enough?
It's incredibly expensive in this country. I mean, much more so than most European countries. And it's appalling. And it makes it extremely difficult for, I think, especially mothers to go back to work. And that's in all professions. And if they do go back to work, you know, as you were saying, they're spending half their salary on childcare, which is an absurd situation. And I think a lot of the discussion that we've been having is about time today, because obviously whatever profession you're doing, all of a sudden when you have a child, you also have to care for your child 24 hours a day. And I don't know, it just seems to be a political point more than anything, that it all boils down to kind of that there should be some kind of affordable childcare if people want it.
So you're saying over that childcare, especially within the first 2 or 3 years, is simply not available or not affordable?
It's incredibly expensive.
Are there other people who want to?
It's fantastic when you get it, but then it depends on where you live as well and to how it's kind of applied. Because at the moment, it was literally like the flags went up when my son hit three, because he got 12 and a half hours a week free. But you can't do those, if you're in Sussex, you can't do those 12 hours over 3 days and think you're not paying anything. The nursery will only do 2.5 hours, and you have to pay that hour and a half a day, because the government's giving them 2.5 hours a day for 5 days. If that doesn't fit in with you, you still end up paying. But in Kent, you can take those 15 hours in lumps. So it's a really odd kind of bureaucracy in how you apply, but once they hit three, then you suddenly have the time again.
Then you don't have a career anymore.
No. Potentially you don't have a career anymore.
I don't know if this is...
Go on.
Is this one? I think only one works at the moment. Is this working? Yeah. I think the problem is, if you're freelance or if you're self-employed, that you don't have a regular income every month. So say, for example, if you are working for a bank or you're working somewhere quite secure and you know you're working 3 days a week every single week, then it's fine. You know exactly how much your outgoings are going to be and what your incomes are going to be. But when you work, like a lot of us, which is basically, you know, freelance, your income can go up and down every month. And also the amount of hours you work can go up and down every month. So I think that's where you can find it quite problematic, because you have to find that flexibility in childcare. And if you decide, I'm going to get someone to mind a child 2 days a week or 3 days a week, and then you find that you don't work those days, you still have to pay that childcare. So I don't know, that's quite difficult.
Is it at all possible to depend on state public structures as they exist now? That might be a kind of broader question, because I think that also leads on to, if the system doesn't work, then what's another system?
Hello. Going to say, and it ties in with your point about solidarity that was on the email, that it might be good to get a group of you together and have a studio together, and you have like one day where four women all look after all the kids and they kind of share it all between them. So it's not relying on a government thing, it's actually just organising something between yourselves, and it's free then.
I mean, I inherently like the sound of that, because I think that, you know, there seems to be important to be able to rely on oneself, but what that means can mean all kinds of things. And I'm very curious about the fact that when we discuss the state of provision, the assumption is always that it should work and that it's the state's responsibility somehow that it should work, but it doesn't, and that's the end of the story. I think certainly something that Martine and I have discussed has always been this question of what does it take to care for kids? You know, does it take a special qualification? Does it take a particular kind of building? Does it take particular kind of resources? And I'm not sure I'm convinced that there are cut and dry answers to that.
I think it takes a lot of energy. I think it takes a lot of energy, and I'm really interested that you said that you like the sound of four parents. Was actually you said mothers, but four parents sharing the responsibility of me. So maybe one parent would look after four kids, three would work, and then it would all swap around over a number of days. But I'm just wondering whether could you imagine looking after four children for a day?
Well, this is.
That's okay. Unfair I can question. Take it. He doesn't have children.
No, I can take it, because there's
so
I
you're
think
contemplating
it's a,
it. I'm just intrigued.
I think it would be a terrific learning curve.
But I mean, let's say okay. I appreciate you don't have children at the moment, but
okay.
From
your straight answer, yes.
Yeah.
I could cope with four kids. One day a week.
One day a week.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm sure I had more further to go there.
Martina, are you? You want to say something?
I feel really passionate about this, and I feel really strongly about this. And I'm willing to ask here in this group today, is anybody willing to enter into an arrangement with me where I have your kids one day a week, and among others, Joe's got her hand up, you have mine. I can't afford childcare. I can't afford the headspace as a result. I can't make work. I could just about get this together because it's very practically orientated in terms of emailing and phone calls. And the headspace is on a much more practical basis. But outside of that, in terms of my creativity, in terms of work that I really want to get my teeth into, it seems like it's an indulgence somehow to do that when she's asleep for 2 hours, because there's a whole lot of other shit I need to get done. And I can't afford the space, headspace or any other kind of space. So I need it, and if anybody else feels they need it and are willing to join me, then we could sort of see if this model works. But it's worth a go.
I like that as a point to come to. We have to try and sort of release this space around maybe 1:45, 1:50. I'm not going to say let's look at what's on the wall just yet. I just want to suggest that there's maybe another 5-10 minutes of general discussion. And that although I don't want there to be I don't think Martina would be ready for a full manifesto to be blasted out by the end of this session, and I'm certainly aware that it might be not completely easy to kind of assimilate everything that's on the wall, not because Martina's handwriting isn't very good, but because it's a little way away. That maybe that we should spend 10 minutes towards the end just making trying to condense down what are the really key maybe demands or requirements or necessities that we can put forward in a credible way to people who want to know what why things should be better than they are now. I think this issue about an informal arrangement, the business of people working with each other, I think is extremely live and very critical at this time in politics and British society. Only recently there were two women police officers who were effectively censored or not quite prosecuted, but they weren't convicted, but they were taken to trial because they had arranged to look after each other's kids on a rota basis. And the fact that they were looking after their kids for more than, I think, there was some limit in terms of hours, 16 hours a week or something like this, at which point it becomes a professional issue, that you should be a professional if you offer that amount of service to someone else. So because they weren't professionals, they were deemed to be operating illegally. Now, those kinds of cases, of course, there was a bit of a hue and cry about it because it's obviously ridiculous and stupid and against all forms of common sense. But it worries me that common sense is often the one thing which is not properly evident in public discussions amongst people who seem to be experts or should know better. So with regards to what it means to be informal rather than formal, what it means to rely on each other rather than some kind of state or municipal or educational machinery to take care of things, I wonder what the obstacles are to that. I remember talking to someone, an older person, about her recollections of the ICA in the late 60s, and it made me laugh. I remember vividly her explaining that in the late 60s, at the new ICA, when it moved to the Mall, there were a bunch of people called, I think, the Amazing Technicolor Peelers, who were a performance group of artists who dressed up as policemen, but in vivid rainbow colours, and would basically take your kid off and entertain them for a couple of hours, whilst you went off and did the ICA and did whatever was happening there. And that seemed to me a very interesting kind of anecdote, because of course those people wouldn't have been qualified in childcare, they wouldn't have been CRB checked, there was no formal kind of contractual arrangement between people leaving their kids and the people running the peelers. And it seems to me that the fact that those things do become obstacles or appear as things that are necessary force us or allow us to forget that once upon a time it was much easier to do, not just in Latin America, but in the UK. So I think if there are other kind of questions, comments, and discussion points around that, I'd be keen to hear it. Whether we have the amount of informality necessary in our society and our culture that allows some of these might allow some of these problems to be resolved in different ways. But maybe I've spoken too much.
I'm sorry, I'm abandoning the microphone.
One here? Go on.
I was just thinking about what Martina was saying about people helping each other out, which I think is the same sort of thing as you're talking about. In terms of being a parent, I think I've had an incredible amount of help. There is a lot of help to be a parent with a child these days, say, compared to when my mother was having children.
Okay.
Which is really amazing. Any anxiety you have, you can go somewhere, a group or a class. But I think being an artist and a parent, there's very, very little help. And it's a different thing. Maybe it's new. There's lots of reasons why. And I think this idea of people helping each other is new and therefore could be amazing. I mean, just swapping days, something important, something that... I mean, it's difficult in London because it's very spread out. I think it happens in smaller communities. But in terms of feeling isolated, I do, as a parent, as an artist, not as a parent with a child. I have the same problems that people are talking about when you get in touch with people about your work and they're like, what have you been doing? And you have to say, I've been... that's been quite new. She's not quite two, so I'm getting back to that. And I do get that from people. And I think I don't have anywhere to sort of... because I don't know that many people. There must be plenty of people with kids who have this problem, but it doesn't feel there's that sort of network. And I think that would be the most positive thing to come out of this, really, because I get help with childcare, to do with tax credits, but everyone's got different situations with how they live. But in terms of the idea of getting help as an artist and a parent from other people who are doing the same thing, I think would be really... amazing.
I think we sort of coined the phrase in writing up those agenda points, that artist parent. I don't know if it's a phrase that other people use, but to tie them together, I think is important, because it's quite clear from this discussion that the artist parents have artist related type needs when it comes to being a parent. That's to say, there's a particular way of being an artist that makes the standard version, the 9-to-5, the full time. The regular, completely inappropriate, and in some ways causes a great number of obstacles, and creates a great, takes away from artist parents. Actually they're underprivileged, or are become relatively underprivileged because of the fact that the reality of the life of a practicing artist is something to do with being a kind of freelance, is something to do with someone who's has an income which is variable and sometimes, you know, initially quite precarious. So to kind of work through what the conditions would be to make being an artist parent more viable around these issues of provision and organisation, I think would be very good and very productive. Oh, and the last, yes, Martina's bothering me with the issue of competitiveness, because we were talking about the idea that actually artists are so competitive and so ruthless and so dog-eat-dog in their attempt to get to, you know, climb up the greasy pole of their careers, that there's absolutely no way you're going to collaborate ever.
I think it's just a kind of side point to that, is that I think, you know, artists are very competitive, and a lot of the discussion has been a kind of panic about, you know, what if I have 2 years off, like what do curators say, or how can I justify that, which is ridiculous, really, in a sense. I mean, you know, after having my daughter, the first kind of 6 months, I thought, oh, after 6 months, I'll be able to do a few things again. And then you realize, actually, it's going to take a lot longer than that. And I think there's a kind of, you need to sort of sit down a little bit and just go, okay, my production is actually going to be a lot lower for maybe 5 years. But, you know, to keep some production going is important. But to be a bit realistic about it as well, I don't know.
But Ava, I mean, this idea of competition, maybe it's just there, maybe it's just part of the art world. But you said you used the figure of 5 years there, and I think it needs to be, you know, something that needs to be queried, which is, well, how long did you expect to be out, quotes, and would you have had it shorter if you could?
No, I expected to be out, I would say, for a year, and it's been a year now since I had my daughter, and I don't think. And I'm getting back to work a little bit, but I think realistically it takes a lot longer to get fully back to work. Does that? Yeah. And I wouldn't, now that I have had, I'm in this situation, I don't necessarily want it to be any quicker. I want it to be acceptable to have a lower production during that time, because it's just, it's unrealistic to think anything else. In a way.
Well, I guess, again, I just want to push this issue a little bit further about, you know, well, if you could, would you? You know, it's not that, you know, if you could have full-time provision to give you your time back in the week,
for me,
in a year's time, would you take it?
I mean, for me, I wouldn't want to have my child in full-time childcare, but part-time, yes, definitely, yeah.
Any more on this or others that want to? This lady here, I don't think has spoken. Can we get the microphone over here? Oh, we'll take this lady here and then lady on the floor.
I think for me it's...
Did you say who you are?
Oh, my name's Sonia. And I think for me it's the quality of childcare, because I'm from Australia, my husband's family's in the Caribbean, so... When we did go to Australia, she was surrounded by people that couldn't keep their hands off her, and that's, you know, I'd be happy to have her with my family 24/7. We've got a cleaner who I love, she's fantastic, and she loves Ruby, and I'd be happy for her to spend time with her. So I think, I mean, even if I wasn't trying to get back to my practice, I think for me it's important that she spends time with people that care about her. Regardless, you know, I don't like the idea of her being a clingy child that just wants to be with her mum all the time. So then it comes down to a quality of childcare. I think you can't just say childcare, because, you know, she could be with her father, or she could be with a complete stranger that's doing it for £4 an hour and secretly hates children. I mean, there's a huge chasm between those two people. And for me, my issue now is trying to find someone. I'm not interested in qualifications, but I'm interested in someone that I feel can really genuinely care about her when they're with her.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing that she should have, regardless of what I'm doing with my time
Do you think that other parents, artist parents, might be well qualified?
Well, I think the term artist is so broad. I think it covers nearly every type of person that exists. So okay. I think if you can find a group of people that are similarly placed, like I've never met the woman that set this...
Martina.
I've never met Martina, but Martina and I have a mutual friend. So for me, that's a good stepping stone. So I'm interested in speaking to her about doing this, because if I can be friends with Anthony and she can be friends with Anthony, there's a common ground, you know, so it's a starting point. As far as setting it up with a complete stranger, you know, you'd start going by instinct and then you'd sort of look into what you're making sure you've got similar values and things, because I think the term artist is too broad to define the type of person that that might be.
My name's Phoebe. I'm the daughter of two artists, so I kind of was brought up in this world myself. So
you
I
point,
know
point
about
your
it.
Microphone at you?
Yeah, so I'm the daughter of two artists, so I had all of this. And when my mum was working, when I was little, I stopped recognising her because she wasn't around. So my mum had to give up work in order to look after me. And I know that she hasn't got back to work until I was about 17, so I know how hard it is for mothers. And my dad wasn't around that much until Sonny was born. But it's so hard for mothers, but it's good. It made me a stronger person.
Sorry. Well, I just wanted two things. One, on in terms of like a cooperative babysitting situation, I have tried that, and it was based on instinct of the other person who I just felt it was a good pairing, twice a week, and it... For 2 hours, taking care of two instead of one is already exhausting, so I can't imagine doing four in terms of that other. I just wanted to do that. But then on a totally different point, when we talk about a curator saying, well, what did you do for the last 2 years? My problem is, and I'm not there yet because I haven't gotten back into it, but is there a chance that we need to, in our bios, say, and is the mother of a young child? Because it never comes up. When you look at the bio of any artist on any gallery site or anywhere, that's just not a part of it. And I don't know, maybe that doesn't need to be, but maybe if it is there, it becomes more a part of the culture and we don't act as if that's not to be spoken about. Because I do feel as if you're not meant to bring it up, ever.
One or two last quick questions, points, declarations, is what I'm going to, yeah. I'm going to ask everybody to think hard for a moment about what goes on a big piece of paper at the end of this. But I just want to catch any last people who've been eager to speak. No? There's a lady.
For me...
Who are you?
Annabelle Shelton from Milton Keynes.
Hello.
I found it difficult to find other people to look after my children, so I've always kind of depended on the state and working family tax credit. And I was in a job, and I, by the end of paying childcare, I had £76 a week, a month, should I say. So I decided that actually it wasn't worth working, so I'd go work from home as an artist and have my kids at home. And in some ways it worked, in other ways it didn't, so I've had to work through the night. But I think, you know, living where I do, I don't have that network of other artists and help. So I've always had to sort of be creative in the way that I tackled it. And it's actually changed my work as well, because my work's related to... having the children and working with the children and making the work with it. So, you know, my work is actually about hurdles. And I've made this whole series. What do you think?
Not sure yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you going to say something? What do you think? It's about being here.
Can we take one or two last comments? Go on.
Yeah. I think also one thing is that it came up a bit, this idea almost that there is one way that art practices this thing, and that it just doesn't match with parenthood. Well, who said that art practice is one thing? If you think that very recently women have actually came in numbers to art practice, that in terms of class, ethnicity, has been a diversification, we might still be working with a model of what art practice was that had to do with, like, you know, wealthy men or men that had a lot of time and they just did what they did, and their husbands, wives at home looking after their children. So I guess that this, we shouldn't just take that there is a way of practicing and that we need to work out how we can be parents within that model, but actually challenge that model. And I think it was interesting in the 70s, artists like Monica Ross and other feminist artists that were really challenging this idea that there was a way of practicing that, and you have to kind of like somehow deal with the children to fit in that model, by saying, no, you know, we can work with the children in the house, and, you know, we can work in longer time frames at a smaller scale. So I would insist that it's important that we just don't try to kind of like force the life into that by trying to patch it up, but actually challenge the idea that there is one way of practicing and that we should do that. And then that thing about the cooperative model, I just want to share an experience of something that was set up in Brixton by a group of parents that were mainly kind of artists or, you know, or kind of creative professions. And they set up, they started as a play group. So they would take turns in looking after the kids. And then they wanted to have a bit more time, and they ended up creating this thing called child's place. Well, it's a killer. The moment that you start doing something that is more than taking one kid and looking after you, you enter into the formality of it. The kind of paperwork that you have to do, the kind of checks that you have to do, the hire of space to do this. So I think in terms of like collective childcare, you have to be very careful when you step over the line in which you enter officialdom. And that killer, well, you know, you can do that. And then just swapping one child, especially if they're under two, they're still in nappies. If I used to do a swap. I had two babies. And, you know, it is tough. So I wish you luck with your four.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily going for just for the babies and the nappy changing thing, but more generally. No, I understand. But the key thing here, I mean, an important point there is whether one should accept and respect the limits that are imposed by, like you say, officialdom, bureaucracy, or whether that itself is something that needs to be brought under scrutiny to the extent that it doesn't allow relatively simple forms of association and cooperation to take place, or rather dissuades them, dampens down the possibility of that happening. I think we're going to have to bring it to a close for this particular meeting, but for 10 minutes, and this is not conclusive at all, but somewhere to continue from, I'd like, Martina's going to stand by and be ready to take your manifesto statements, claims, demands. So it doesn't matter whether everybody agrees with them, it doesn't matter if they're outlandish or unrealistic. I think it's always important, as the situation said, to demand, you know, be realistic and demand the impossible, I think it was. Bad translation. But I'd like to ask you to come up with a few starting manifesto points. So we do that. Thank you for coming. Let's do that for 5-10 minutes.
Work toward it being acceptable to take a career break for family reasons. I still don't think it is.
Great. Wave your hand insistently if you've got a manifesto point to bring to this. Come on, we've been talking about it for an hour and a half. It's not impossible.
We can define what art practice is.
Okay. What do people really need? What's necessary? Not in just in the prosaic sense of, you know, childcare, but that could be part of it. I think it should be. But what are the necessities of making this happen? Go on.
Discrimination, really. If you're an artist and you're a parent, I think that's one of the biggest boundaries.
How do you mean, sorry? Let's just try and work that out.
When you say you're an artist and a mother, it's sort of, I don't know, all sort of flags go up. Just, you know, they think that, I don't know, they just don't take you seriously.
Okay.
That, you know, you're...
Yeah. Martina's got that, sort of.
Yeah.
Come on, I think we need at least 10 to make this a proper manifesto. I don't think manifestos have to, you know, can't have less than 10 points, in my experience.
I think that there's been sort of two strands that we've been talking about here in terms of there's the kind of pragmatic things and then also how, sort of in terms of childcare and whatnot, but then there's how one's practice might actually be affected by having a child. So there are sort of two things that we've been talking about. I think one of the things that could help people maybe with continuing with their work and figuring out how having a child had changed their practice, that maybe getting together to have kind of group critiques, to talk together, to be talking about the work.
So what's your demand, Jemima?
To have group critiques, to talk about art, not just about children. I want to carry on talking about art. Fantastic. Because I'm still an artist.
Great. And were there two strands? I'm angling to get another one out of you.
I think the two strands of what we've been talking about here have been, it's been mostly loaded towards the kind of pragmatic things in terms of childcare. But I think when we started off talking, it was kind of two strands about childcare and then maybe how having a child might affect our art practice.
Okay.
But I think in terms of addressing how we might talk about how having a child had affected our art practice, maybe group critiques of parents getting together to talk about art rather than childcare.
Okay. Come on, we're only halfway there. Sort of.
I think...
Ooh. Just shout into it, it'll come on. Go on.
Hello?
Yeah.
I think just acceptance that if you have a child, you change naturally.
That's not a demand, that's an acceptance.
It's not a demand, but you've got to accept that if you have a child, you will have time off. It's just part of... I don't know what you can demand apart from demand from yourself to just push through it and accept that your life has changed.
Okay, so a demand to accept that your life has changed? Okay. We need three more. Martina.
The Whitechapel Gallery are setting up a series of talks. It's a little bit like baby cinema, where you can take your baby and it doesn't matter how much they scream because everybody else in the audience has a baby and their baby's screaming too. So you can attend on the 1st of September, set up with the Whitechapel Gallery and a mother who attended the last Enemies of Good Art meeting, Kim Dillon. We can all attend, we can take our babies, and the artist who's giving the talk, or the academic, or whoever it may be, the details I don't have yet, will be very sympathetic to the fact that our children may scream. This is a first, it hasn't happened. If it's happened, it's happened a long time ago. I would like more entertainment, more art entertainment, where it's acceptable to take our children, in terms of academic discussion and lectures.
Go on then, write it down. So that's a kind
actually,
of...
Actually, there is an issue with our colleges, for example, that you are not allowed to bring children in for insurance reasons. And I think I'm quite happy to bring my child along to things, but there are some places that actually, for insurance reasons, children are not allowed, and art colleges are one.
Brilliant. That's, so change, that's the law, change the law of public liability insurance. There we go.
Solidarity with other parents. This is not an issue for art. This is an issue for all parents. You know, parenthood is not something that is valued in our society. It's something that is seen as a kind of like deal with it and kind of like somehow punished. So I think solidarity with other parents.
I want to put in a demand, Martina, that one floor of the new Tate extension should be given over to multi-purpose creche play center space. We'll just have to check with the Tate if they can you know, sort that out for us. They can do pretty much everything else by the looks of it. Creche facility in a space, a national gallery like the Tate. Sorry?
A little cubby holes where artists can go to work.
Which isn't your studio.
No, but it's like you can go in there and work for the day as your studio.
Oh.
You could hire it for the day for like £10.
Okay. Okay, we got one. I'm going to bring it to a close very shortly, but I'm not sure if that was just being sarcastic. Do you want to make that point again? Because it was sort of interesting.
I suppose it could be. It's a public-funded space. You could, like, you know, support the parent.
Workspaces.
Yeah, workspaces for parents.
In galleries.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just was going to second that to say, yeah, that would be great for me personally, for my practice, if there was a place that I could hire a studio for a day here and there as opposed to paying a monthly fee. That would be brilliant.
Okay, hot desk studios for artist parents.
Because that would then roll in that thing of being able to talk to each other.
That would then include being able to talk to each other about the work if we were sharing studio space on that kind of model. I think some people would continue to want to carry on renting studios, but to have that possibility to meet up with people regularly and for there to be an organisation, it would be. I think it's interesting to see where Enemies of Good Art is going to go next. It's a new movement, and we'll see what it does next to kind of achieve these aims that we're going to hopefully be putting together soon.
Do you work with APE, IAPT, Artist Parent Talking?
How's it feeling, Martina? You feeling like this is...
There's been some discussion.
Could start something? Any last manifesto demands?
Oh, I got one.
Oh.
Peter, come on.
I think it's... I missed it, but I think it might be what you said, but I think public galleries should think more about all having meetings that are open, and when they have guests, when they have speakers that are ticketed, that should change back to being something much more open, informal, where artists can go if they've got children. So it's going back to something less formal, I think.
Okay. Is that a demand or go back to more?
Yeah, go back to it. When you have people who come over and talk, you then think, well, could they talk in an open session as well that isn't ticketed, where artists can come along and, in a sense, be much more artist-friendly.
Okay.
And obviously then children would be with them or could be with them.
Okay. Right, I'm going to... Liz is going to want us to wrap up. Where's she going? Unless there are any burning last demands, if you feel that this manifesto is so far too woolly, too kind of cautious, too timid, and you've got some really kind of wild ideas that need to be thrown in, this is your last minute to do so. Experimental acoustics should be involved in. Yeah, Nagel has one. Hang on.
Just somebody was saying about, you have to pay to enter awards. Maybe you could give new mothers a one-year amnesty from having to pay to enter.
Yes, definitely.
To enter competitions.
Okay. I think that's about as much time as we have. Once Martina has written that one up, I'd just like to say then... Parents, that's true, actually. Not mothers. Parents, maybe. So on that point, there's going to be time to discuss this. You can stay on this platform as long as you like this afternoon. But we have to bring this formally to a close. So I'd like to thank you all for being here. And I'd like to thank Martina for putting so much energy and commitment and vision into getting this whole thing going. So round of applause for Martina. And a round of applause for all of you. So without further ado, thanks very much. And right, that's it. Let's just carry on, but not with microphones. Thanks.